from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Hello, 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 hello. Welcome to Rated LGBT Radio. And I am your host, Rob Watson. It is my pleasure to be with you once again. Reminder, our podcast is available on all podcast apps. You just subscribe to us. Tell your friends. We welcome you and are grateful for your listenership. I do want to mention we had several accolades at the end of last year. We were named one of the top LGBT podcast by Player FM, and then to turn around to set up the new year, Feedspot.com named us one of the top 20 worldwide LGBT shows that you have to listen to in 2020. So welcome, and we hope to live up to that expectation, and we are very, very, very thrilled to have you. Speaking about kicking off the new year and a new decade, Rated LGBT Radio is also proud to announce that we have a brand new sponsor, and that is the Los Angeles Blade newspaper. The Los Angeles Blade newspaper is the largest LGBTQ media outlet serving Southern California and is a partner newspaper of the Washington Blade, which is one of the oldest LGBT continuously published newspapers in the United States. And it is the nation's only alternative press member of the White House Press Corps. Rated LGBT Radio welcomes the LA Blade, and we look forward to a long and beneficial association. And if you want to check out the Blade, please go to www.losangelesblade.com, and you can read them every single day and find out what's going on. As we do. Today's guest, I can't wait to talk to. He's an out actor, but more importantly, he has a really poignant character role in the new film that just got released at the end of December called Clemency. Clemency stars Alfre Woodard in an absolutely heart-wrenching role, and of course she is always wonderful, but this is probably one of the highlight performances of her career. And Alex is a poignant character in this film at an absolutely crucial moment, and we can't wait to talk to him about that. We've got award season coming up, so hopefully Clemency will hit the radar when the Oscar nominations are named next week. But Alex has been seen in 57 TV and film roles so far in his career. So we're going to talk to him about that and his production company, which has a whole bunch of exciting things that they've both done and are looking to do. So he is a busy man, a talented man, and we will be talking to him very shortly. Before that, I do want to welcome to the show co-host Brody Levesque. How are you doing?
I'm recovering, Rob. Good afternoon, good morning, and good day to our listeners around the globe. Yeah, it's been a, quite frankly, hellacious 5 or 6 day long ordeal for those of us that are journalists having to report on the Iranian American crisis. About 2 hours ago, we learned from very credible sources within the American defense and intelligence community that the Ukrainian airliner with 170 people who perished aboard on takeoff from Tehran International looks to have been shot down by accident by Iranian security and defense batteries ringing the city. Who, of course, were on high alert, expecting American airstrikes after they had taken and leveled airstrikes in Iraq against Erbil and Al-Assad air base. So it's kind of a real tragic situation here. Sources in the Defense Department are telling us in the media that they saw a radar lock of Russian-made surface-to-air missiles, two of which engaged the airliner. And not unlike what happened in 1988 when the Americans Navy shot down an unarmed airliner. The Iranians, unfortunately, shot this one down. As you know, I'm Canadian. My prime minister and my government are looking at this very closely. And, of course, as are the rest of the world. So it's kind of a tragic circumstance. It's been back and forth. In other news, Speaker Pelosi has indicated that she will be sending the articles of impeachment to the U.S. Senate fairly soon. She did not put a time frame on it just yet. However, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is backing a resolution to change the Senate's rules, which would allow lawmakers to dismiss the articles of impeachment against Trump before the House even sends them over, should it start to work out that way. So things on the impeachment front are still a little bit dicey. And in relation to our show last week, where we talked to Kenan, the very nice young man running the Kids For organization, who's focusing in on homelessness issues, California Governor Gavin Newsom announced this week that he is also going to dump even more money into the task force looking at homelessness. The governor is set on trying to do something to address the ills and causes of homelessness, something that Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti noted yesterday has got to be beneficial, especially in light of an incident which took place in November where a homeless man wielding a machete was shot dead by LAPD officers. And according to members of that person's family, he was suffering from some mental health issues and other things and was in fact homeless. So there's just kind of a alignment here of the planets as we look at this. To our guest, I'm extremely interested in talking to him because I have a personal disinclination to be all that happy about the death penalty. As a matter of fact, I'm very much opposed to it.
Which we should point out for our listeners that your reference there is to the film Clemency, which deals kind of front and center with the death penalty issue.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so it'll be nice. I'm also interested in getting his views on Hollywood and Hispanic representation, both with Latino and Latina actors and actresses across a wider spectrum. I had a conversation in 2015 during the press junket for George Lopez's film about the kids that did a miraculous job of putting together an underwater robotic thing and won a competition. And they were just high school students from a public high school in Phoenix, Arizona, and they were all undocumented. But one of the things that I talked to George at that point, which has still been a problem in Hollywood, is an underrepresentation of, you know, in general, the Latino and Latina actresses, let alone gay ones. So that'll be nice to talk to Alex about that as well. So that's kind of news and kind of where I'm at right now this afternoon.
Okay, great. Well, so we can kind of satisfy your itch there, Brody. Let's bring Alex on so we can actually talk about a lot of those issues. Alex, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
We are thrilled to have you. So, Alex, tell us about the film Clemency. This is very exciting stuff, and hopefully it's getting on a lot of notoriety radar this season.
Well, sure. In a nutshell, Clemency is the story of prison warden Bernardine Williams, who is played by the legendary actor Alfre Woodard. And it's basically as she prepares to execute another inmate, she starts confronting the psychological and emotional demons that her job creates, ultimately connecting her to the man she's sanctioned to kill. It gives us a very unfiltered look at what happens between prison walls and really the effect on those that the death penalty in capital punishment has on those that are charged with carrying out the executions by the state.
And your role in it, you play kind of one of those pivotal roles in a film that start the tone of the whole movie,
right,
from my understanding. First of all, how did you get involved in the project? How did that hit your radar, and what led you to want to do this?
Sure. I played the role of Victor Jimenez. He is an inmate on death row facing execution, and it's it really kicks off the movie, the opening sequences, which where I'm in. And in a nutshell, I have to tell you that I was thrilled to even be called in for an audition for something as important as this. But because normally I play dads and I play cops or victims that are dads and cops. So when my agents send me the audition notice to audition for an inmate on death row, I'm like, wow, this is something really interesting. And then I read the script. And written by our writer-director, Shinoya Chukwu, who I will forever be indebted for giving me this incredible opportunity to not only creatively as an actor, but also to be part of such an important and thought-provoking film. After I read the script, I looked her up. I Googled her, and I found this amazing TED Talk that she does about living intentionally with joy. And I learned a lot about her also, and I'm like, I have to be part of this movie and help her and help the filmmakers get this made and get this scene, obviously. So I auditioned, and I was given the role, and the rest is history.
Yeah, no, very exciting. You've gotten accolades around your performance, so I can't wait to see it. This is quite a departure, I understand, though, for you, because you've got kind of this really clean-cut, professional look, and this character
right.
is anything but. What did you do to prepare for this role?
I'll tell you, it's if there was ever an opportunity to truly transform myself, this one was it. First and foremost, one of the things that I try to do as an actor and before I do anything else is really find the humanity in the character or bring the humanity to the character of Victor Jimenez. And Shinoya Chukwu, our writer-director, was so thoughtful and gave me a blueprint about the character. The character of Victor is inspired by a real person of a different name, and she and I spoke about it for a while. And in those conversations, and then subsequently in the work that I did to really, really see the human side of Victor, that was really the very beginning. And as I started understanding how he would talk, how he would walk, how he, you know, sort of like all the physicality of that character would feel like, then I started really working on more of the psychological piece of this, which is how does someone bring themselves to actually commit the heinous crime that he did, which I'm not going to tell you what it was, but it landed him on death row. So I don't want to spoil the film for you. But the bottom line is that once you find the humanity and you connect to the person and you sort of separate your opinion, my own opinions and my own feelings about how I might feel about the character and really become the character, that's where I began. And then from a physical perspective, I lost over 20 pounds. I worked with an incredible makeup and special effects a person named J.Q. Quinteros, who is amazing, and as you might be, well, you'll see in the film, but if you see some photos that are out now, I'm completely padded up as well, shaved my head, and really started thinking about how how I might I behave and walk and talk and so forth. And the last piece I'll say of any of this is that it was really helpful to speak with formerly incarcerated people to really get a better sense of what happens between prison walls. And you'll find that it's very mundane inside prison most of the time. In Hollywood, we often see a lot of dramatization of you know, of prison life with lots of fights and lots of drama and in general, or for the most part, in talking to these guys, it's very mundane existence of get up and you eat and you go and do your exercise and you come back and you do that and you read and you go to sleep a lot of the time and do your chores basically. But so creating all of that life and really absorbing it was able to give me sort of a really good grounded, feeling about Victor, but more importantly, the approach to the character.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying about the environment within a prison. I've visited different facilities before, and you're right. It is oftentimes very subdued and almost eerie. I mean, it's very oppressive and eerie, but not that kind of threatening, dramatization stuff you normally get. How did it feel during that period as you were preparing for the role and showing up and doing the role and kind of living it? Did you take stuff home with you? I mean, did it do kind of a mental, emotional number on your head as you were going through that?
You would have to be non-human for this kind of material, but also this kind of experience not to affect you. One of the things that was really helpful for me is, especially in the days that I worked on this film, and this film was shot in 17 days, the whole feature film, and my role was shot over 2 days. So everything you'll see on that screen was shot really mostly in 1 day and some part of it in a second day. But you know, for me, two things happened. I'm very lucky to have had a very, very generous and very protective crew, especially our cinematographer, Eric Branco, creates a very safe space for all of us to play. In addition to the unbelievable director, Shinoya Chukwu, who made sure that we were all taken care of. Our producers, Bronwyn Cornelius and Julian Cotherly, also felt it was very important to have grief counselors on set, just in case someone needed to talk, because this material, as you'll see it, is very, very tough. So for me, feeling and being surrounded by a lot of that safety net was very, very helpful. But I would say that the biggest part for me, and what kept me somewhat grounded during those very long hours, was the very kind gestures that Alfre Woodard showed to me during between every take. And again, I will forever be indebted to her for keeping. I felt like I had an angel looking out for me in that sequence. Over the days that we shot it, but I would say that the last thing is, it was very emotional, and I probably say, and Alfre actually, I just read an article in Vanity Fair where she talks about how for the next couple of months she would weep, and so did I. You know, you sort of think about all the men and women that go through this, all the experience that we went through on the film, and about how it stayed with us. You know, every once in a while, even talking to you right now, I'm getting a little choked up. I feel much better in the sense that if we portrayed the reality of capital punishment, as I believe we do in the film, and that changes hearts and minds and elevates the conversation, advances the conversation about capital punishment, then we've done our job.
Yeah, no, and that is the purpose of true art, is to move us and make us feel and think and understand things on a level that we wouldn't otherwise necessarily get to. So, I mean, I want to thank you deeply for taking that journey. And Alfre is amazing. She's as a performer, plus, quite frankly, she never ages. I mean, watching the clips of this guy, I'm going, oh my God, it's like the Fountain of Youth is just, you know, but obviously that's not what this is about, but just
right.
Side note, the woman never ages. Brody, you had some questions you wanted to ask about the issue itself, I think.
Well, it's difficult, I think, and I'm sure that you would probably agree, Alex, that in a cultural sense, particularly in California's correctional system, where a lot of the Latino offenders, most of them are Cholo, and that's their background. That's how they come up. That's what they know. But at the same time, I think that in many ways, it becomes almost a stereotype, and they lose a little bit, okay, of the humanity along the way. Yeah. So taking on this character, you know, and I'm not saying he's Cholo, but it kind of, for intents and purposes, you know, and, you know, given, you know, this is also background and heritage, you know, in a generalized sense for you,
right.
What did you discover as you took on the character and you had to look at this, and then let's put over the top of that the fact that a disproportionate amount, okay, of Latino and Black offenders, quite frankly, who are on death row, you know, are put there in most cases, you know, way out of proportion to, you know, their white counterparts.
Right.
So there's the two parts of the equation there. How did that affect you? What did you think about it? And give me your thoughts on that, if you don't mind.
No, of course. I appreciate the question. In fact, your question was the very first question we were asked at Sundance when we had our premiere back in January of last year. And the whole objective is to really portray the reality of brown and black, primarily men, on death row, right? This we as a people are disproportionately represented in the wrong way, you know, in the prison system in the United States. Be that as it may, though, I would say that it was very important, getting back to your original piece of this, but I wanted to make sure that I did two things. To your point, a lot of Latinos in the prison system or death row, from my research and just being part of this film, come from very lower economic backgrounds, and in the Cholo culture that you've generalizing that, and I wanted to make sure that I represented that authentically. So when you see me in the film, you will see a shaved head and tattoos and a completely different look and feel to me. To your point earlier, Rob, about I'm a relatively educated, clean-cut person who has had another career before I came into acting in the private sector, in the corporate world. And so it couldn't be farther from my life. Having said that, I wanted to become one of these people from a look and feel perspective. But the more important piece of it is, again, what I said earlier about bringing the humanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
To your point, there's a dehumanization that happens in prison, clearly for a number of different reasons, but I wanted the audience generally to see this person as a human being first, as anyone in death row or in prison normally is, you know, independent of whatever crimes or whatever circumstances brought them into that environment. So it was intentional. You know, the two main inmates on death row in the film, one is a brown man and one is a black man, in order to truly, and more importantly, highlight, you know, what's truly out there happening in the prison system, but more importantly, showing the humanity of both of these characters. I will tell you that one of the most important things that I learned, and I was incredibly surprised, which is really a lot of, as you might know, as you'll discover by watching the film highlights the subject. It doesn't give you, it doesn't lead you in one direction or another as it relates to capital punishment or mass incarceration. It really is about the effect that capital punishment has on those that are charged with carrying out the executions. But through them, we get to see the dehumanization of everybody else in there. So
okay.
I'm hopeful that answered your question.
It did. I just, the one thing that I always wonder, and during the press junket for Spare Parts, the aforementioned Lopez film from 2015,
right.
One of the things that George had said that I paid attention to was he didn't want the characters and he didn't want the presentation to be a caricature. And,
right.
And, you know, that's why I asked you that question, Alex, is because I know in part, and I'm sure Rob and I'll get into that here in a few minutes with you, but there is a pink ceiling and there's also a brown ceiling and a brown Latino ceiling. And there's the, well, let's just put them into these niches in terms of caricatures. And so I wanted to know how you looked at that as an actor. You use the word humanity as a political reporter. The other thing that I looked at is okay, is this a representation in caricature or is it a representation in authenticity? If you don't
right.
mind answering that as my follow-up.
Right. No, I completely understand. I would say that this is a complete case study in authenticity from a creative and from an actor perspective. One of the reasons I think this movie is so compelling is because our writer-director, Shinoya Chukwu, spent 4 full years researching this subject, engaging a lot of people in the prison system, not only those who work in the prison system, but those who are inside the prison system. And so she was able to then, fully integrate all of that authenticity into the script. And then we as actors were able to basically take the best of that and then bring our own idea in our own lives, you know, to it. These are fully realized three-dimensional characters you as the audience or the audience in general is able to see, very, very deep, well-thought-out three-dimensional people up on the screen that go way above and beyond what a caricature or a very, superficial stereotype would be.
Okay, fair enough, Rob.
Yeah, Alex, I wanted to switch gears a little bit on you here and move to kind of your whole career. I mean, obviously you're a working actor, which is congratulations, because a lot of people can't quite achieve that. I mean, 57 roles over the course of time here. But you know, in your production company and the work you do, acting doesn't seem to be just the end all. You seem to have another layer of effect and social consciousness that you're looking to achieve through your talent. Is that an accurate statement, or what is the motivation behind your trajectory?
You know, I'm glad you said that. When I'm often asked the question, what do you do at a cocktail party, you know, or at a, you know, at a networking event, I often answer, it depends who you ask. You know, I have three very distinct lanes of my professional life. I live in the creative arts world through performing and producing. I live in the philanthropy world by being a part of being on a couple of boards, and I also live in the consulting world by working for a firm that works in the nonprofit university and public sector consulting, strategy consulting. The through line through all these three lanes is social impact. So as it relates to the work that I do in the creative arts, the work that I do in philanthropy, and the work that I do in consulting, it all relates to, you know, helping those either tell the stories on the creative arts, really make the world a better place on the philanthropy world, or in the consulting world, helping those who want to help the world become a better place, helping them from a strategy and in an overall perspective. So it's all really, in the end, to the through line of social impact. And I've been very, very fortunate to be able to keep all three lanes going on for a long time. Sometimes one of the lanes takes over, you know, versus the other ones, but I'm very fortunate to have the flexibility to be able to be in all three of them. Getting more specific about the creative arts, I have very understanding agents who have been very, very understanding with my desire to work primarily on social impact and social justice material, creative material. And from my own production company perspective, I really have a very specific mission about developing and delivering projects that entertain first. That's what entertainment is about, but also inspire and promote social and cultural diversity. So that's, you know, which I'm hoping in a nutshell is able to give you sort of my approach to, you know, to my career. I've been very fortunate to, you know, to have been able to continue to work in the creative arts for such a long period of time now, and I'm hoping that continues.
No, that's excellent, and it gives a lot of insight. I wanted to go to the production company that you founded, Castle 2000 Films.
Right.
There are several projects there that are fascinating. One of which I believe I've been familiar with before, and that's the film Pedro,
right.
About Pedro Zamora.
Right.
What is all your involvement on these films, and how did you get started doing this?
Sure. As I mentioned previously, out of university, I worked in the private sector. In brand management, which is really the function of a consumer products company that is in charge of basically running the business, running the brands. And I work for very, very large global companies, and I manage global brands for the first 15 years of my life outside of college. After September 11th, I thought life's too short. I wanted to try something different, a first love of the creative arts. And I came out here from Chicago. That's where I'm from. And I said, okay, I certainly want to perform, but I also want to produce. I want to have a foot or a hand into material that makes the world a better place out there. As it relates to the films that I've worked on over time, I think you were referencing the movie Pedro, this remarkable true story of Pedro Zamora, the AIDS activist and the real world star from MTV's The Real World. It was a narrative feature film that was directed by my producing partner, a terrific director named Nick Oceano, who I had partnered with on a short film that we had done the year before called The Cousin, and which got him which made the radar MTV Films, and we were hired to come on board. I assisted Nick and also the producers on a lot of elements of the story. The story was particularly important to me only because many, many, many years ago, you know, when I first heard of Pedro Zamora and then subsequently saw him on The Real World, he's always been such an inspiration to me. I just wanted to make sure that I did whatever part I could in helping my producing partner, the director, and the producers be able to pull this off. And it was terrific. It was a wonderful experience, and one that I won't forget.
Yeah, it's the roster of films on just, you know, with Castle 2000 look fantastic. And you've got quite a few in the works. Are you like on the set and in every aspect of each of these, or do you set the stage and have other people actually running with them?
You know, it depends. It depends on the project. For instance, on the ones that I'm developing currently, one is called Finding Albie Finch, which is also written and will be directed by my producing partner Nick Oceano. I've been involved from the first moment, the inception of the story, all the way through. Hopefully, when we can be on set and eventually distributed to the world. Another project that I'm working on is called Ransom Seaborn. And that one, we're in creative development right now, and I'm probably going to look for a director to come on board and really add his or her two cents to the production and really run with that. And depending on the timing and the financing, you know, I may or may not be able to be fully involved in that beyond that. But first and foremost, I start as a creative producer. really partnering with, or with filmmakers, primarily writer-directors, and helping them think this through and getting the script to a level that is presentable. Presentable to the world, to the whether it's independent financiers, to the industry, to studios, to be able to make sure that, you know, you only get one shot of making a first impression. So, you know, get that material really ready before we send it out to anyone. And then from there, depending on the film, I may or may not jump on all the way through that.
Yeah, no, it sounds great. And I actually, the Finding Albie Finch was one that really sparked my interest, because it's about an aging gay white alcoholic novelist, and I'm a recovering alcoholic writer myself, so I'm like going, oh my God, I can really dig into this one.
Right.
With a close friendship with a young straight adrift Mexican American mechanic, and
right.
It sounds wonderful. It sounds great. I mean, virtually every film on your list, I think, looks absolutely fascinating and intriguing. And to your point before, each one comes with an image of societal impact.
Right.
How do you find all this material? I mean, are you all constantly on search for these ideas, or how are they developed?
I would say the straightforward answer to that, Rob, is that some find them their way to me, and some I sort of look around and I see, oh my God, that could be make an interesting story. I would say that the ones that I'm in current development in is stuff that I've actually been shepherding for a number of years with the filmmakers, and a lot of it through recommendations from other producers, from other directors. You may want to look at this as around, basically your sensibility, and so forth. And that's how it happens. More likely than not.
Yeah. Well, they look intriguing and fascinating. Brody.
Yeah, Alex, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about making a difference, and something again. And I'm going to reach into your community. The 2001 film, Ito Mama Tambien. Was
yeah.
done by a pair of very, very clever and smart folks. And one of them went on to found Ambulante.
Right.
And I'm, of course, speaking of Diego Luna, who I've actually spoken to numerous times and I hold in the highest regard.
Right.
I know that he and his partner, Gael Garcia Bernal, this is a big focus for them, is making a difference, just like George and some of the films and the film projects he gets into. And I think it speaks for two parts, for me, and I fully admit to it being, a white Canadian, but it's embracing the richness and the positivity of Latino culture. It's embracing, the distinction. And for you, I'm sure it's the same thing, but, please juxtaposition being a gay man in that culture and also at the same time wanting to make the difference and in some of the same veins it sounds like that Ambulante is doing through Diego and Gael's work and how you view it, if you don't mind.
Well, sure. I mean, I think very, very highly of those guys. They're truly pioneers in the elevation of the Latino and Latin, more specifically the Latin American experience through the entertainment, through media, around the world, which I think is really, really wonderful. What I will tell you is that I think it's a little bit of a double-edged sword sometimes, because ultimately entertainment generally, and I look at the Parasite, the Korean film as an example, that's a Korean film for all.
Mm-hmm.
In my perspective, we ought to be making films, let's say Latino films for all, right?
Okay.
So that are universal in nature. If I think about Parasite, again, going back to that example, that is a film that it could easily be understood by most cultures, It's incredible. It's very truthful to the Korean culture, but that could easily be remade in the Mexican culture, Argentinian, you know, French. I mean, it's amazing how universal that is. And so getting back to your question about, first and foremost, I wanted to be, I would really like this, you know, the work that I put on the world, first and foremost, to be, you know, not necessarily perceived as a Latino story. It just, mm-hmm. I wanted these stories to be good stories that are universal that just happen to have Latinos in it, for instance, if that's what it is. And I think it's important to the point you were making earlier about leaving, make a film with purpose. You know, make a film that challenges paradigms, make films that leave the audience not only entertained, but also thinking. You know, it adds value to their lives, you know, and really highlights subjects that either one may not necessarily be that close to, and you learn something new, or you might know something about it, it changes your mind. I will tell you my own personal experience, getting back to clemency for a second, I had a very indifferent view of the death penalty before I'll fully admit to that, before I signed on to this project. And it was learning through, going through the experience over the last nearly 2 years of this now, from our production all the way through now, but very early on, as I got associated with the film, that I realized, and I really learned, and I really understood a lot of elements about capital punishment, mass incarceration, the industrial prison complex, about, you know, to your point, I think you said this earlier, is I have now completely changed my view from indifference to complete opposition to it. And I think, and I'm in the movie, and I'm in the film, you know. So I'm hoping, you know, and that's my own personal opinion. And again, what I said earlier about the film is, like, it doesn't preach either way. We just show you what it's about, and you need to make your own decisions. But so getting back to the work that I do and the work that other filmmakers do, particularly of color, you know, we want to put stories out there that make you think, and at the same time, we want to highlight the richness of our cultures, of our differences, but also obviously the relatable humanity that connects us all.
Fair enough, Rob.
Yeah, no, that's pretty profound. Alex, I wanted to ask you, going back in my past, one of my original aspirations was to be an actor in Hollywood. And as I mentioned, I kind of got a little involved in alcohol, and that sort of dovetailed that away. But when I was involved in the craft and everything else, there was an aspect of it where I felt very driven, and it brought me different insights, which it sounds like it does for you as well. I wanted to ask you, you know, kind of along the lines of what you were just talking about in terms of how, you know, going through an experience essentially changed you personally coming out the other end of it. What does acting do for you, and why did you choose to pursue that craft and that art form?
Sure.
For yourself, sure. Personally.
Well, sure. I appreciate the question. To make a very long story short, I grew up in an immigrant household where you are in Chicago, and where you are expected, as a sacrifice of your parents and grandparents for coming to this country, that you're going to make something out of yourself, and that you're going to be a productive member of society as well as productive member of your family. So let's say that the creative arts never hit that big radar. Law, medicine, business, and other more known careers are first and foremost. So I couldn't justify initially coming out of high school and then into college to go pursue this, even though in my heart I've always known that this is part of my DNA. This is what I wanted to do. I'm only telling you this as a little, to give you a little bit of context as to
right.
Then.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely.
Right. So fast forward. I knew that even though I was very successful in my previous career, there was something that was missing always a little bit, right? That to your point, it's that little bit that you just sort of you feel like you need to do this. And then, as I mentioned before, at the end of 2001, I made the very scary yet exciting decision to leave my private sector corporate career to come pursue an artistic career. And to answer your initial question is, I am so glad I did this for a number of reasons. The first one, the thing that I've gotten the most out of being in the creative arts, particularly in the performing end, is that it's made me a much more empathetic person. It's made me tap in more into my own personal humanity. And that is one thing that as actors, we study, as you know, to be able to connect with other people, to be an active listener, to be fully present. If you're not present with the other performers, there's no scene, there's no play, there's no movie, there's no anything. And it's allowed me to, so that's from a personal perspective, first and foremost, what I've gotten most out of, being an actor and studying acting and that. The second thing is that I truly believe that we can change the world through the art of film, the art of theater, the art of television, the art of music, the art of every kind of creative arts, through the creative arts. And I've been very, very privileged to be around really incredible performers and musicians and artists and sculptors over the last, over the last 20 years that I've been doing this here in Los Angeles, to see that it's a very, very interesting and a very different crowd, a very committed and passionate crowd of people that want to affect the world in a different way than I did way back when I was in the private sector. You know, I wanted to help the world by making the best possible consumer products that people could use and they could buy. But this was different. This was more personal. And it's been a true joy to have finally found a place where I feel like I truly belong. And like I said to you before, the reason I keep the other two lanes of my professional life in creative arts all through the through line of social impact is because of the second point that I made. Because I do believe that we all have a responsibility to help make the world a better place.
No, absolutely. I want to shift a little bit again to, this is something I'd like to get your opinion on. One of the big latest controversies of the last, I'm going to say year, has been, especially from the LGBT perspective, is people playing roles, people, actors playing roles outside of their personal identities.
Right.
In other words, like Scarlett Johansson accepting a role and then subsequently turning it down of a transgender man. And
right.
And likewise, there's been kind of new scrutiny because it really wasn't this way a few years ago, but
right.
of heterosexual actors playing gay roles, et cetera, et cetera. As an out actor who presumably has played his share of straight roles, I kind of wanted to get your perspective. What do you feel about that? And including ethnicity portrayals.
Well, sure. I can give you the broad perspective on this from myself, and this is just my opinion. There are plenty of self-identifying actors, whether it's sexual orientation or ethnicity or gender identity or any of that, out there in the world. Plenty. I'm around them a lot, whether it's people of color or LGBT or transgendered. There's many, many, many actors out in the world, which is wonderful, which is, I think, is terrific. The issue becomes then, to your point, is how do those people, the general population of that, get to have the opportunity, the access? My big issue with all of this is the access that all of these type of actors primarily do not have to those roles, you know.
Right.
It's a business equation. As a former business person, I can see the let's say the business economics part of that. who are the bankable actors, who are the bankable, you know, what are the bankable stories to do that. I am encouraged, though, over the last few years as to how particularly we're still a long ways, particularly in the Latino world, but I think we're still far away, but we're making slight inroads into having studios and streamers and television, you know, production companies and so forth be a little bit more open, a little bit more open to hiring or considering hiring different people for different roles. You know, like the whole, almost like a colorblind casting that happens in theater more often than not. We're still a long ways away from television and film. However, I am encouraged that we're heading in the right direction, although I believe that we're still very, very, very far away.
Right. Yeah. No, and I hear your point, absolutely. For example, the actors in the show Pose, several of them, I think, are incredible actresses that should be able to play a lot of different roles, and they should have access to those. The show The Politician had a young man who played a cisgender male student
right.
in it when he himself was transgender, and nothing about him was ever that was never a factor. He was playing a cisgender role, even though his personal actor body was transgender. And those are just the beginnings of the cracks of getting that opened up,
right.
which will be fantastic. Alex, where do you want to go in the next 10 years? 10 years from now, will I be talking to famous actor Alex Castillo or famous producer, director? If you had to pick one or the other, which one would you be?
That's a really interesting question that I'm asked a lot by my family, actually. But I would say the following. I never got into this to be famous. Never. I came into this business because of a personal need to exercise my creative side and to really help tell stories that make a difference on the world. So in terms of being a famous actor, never been the case. I will tell you, though, that I would very much like to continue to be a working professional in this industry. I love the fact that versus when I started to work now, we all actors can live in the different parts of the medium, if you think about it, right? Before, there were film actors that would never be caught dead on television, or television actors that wouldn't do film, or like all of these different things, right? I love the fluidity in which we're all living in now. So from my perspective, as long as I continue to find and be approached about really good work, that's where my heart lies. I'm always going to continue to put together stories from a producing perspective that mean a lot to me and a lot to the people that are making them. Again, all in the hope to helping bring social and cultural diversity to the world, but also hoping to make the world a better place.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it's well. I think you're awesome. Your work is astounding and exciting, and I for one can't wait to see much, much more of it. Brody, mm-hmm. do you have any last questions for Alex?
Alex, aprecio mucho, tutto bravo. You're amazing. Thank you very much.
Oh, wait, thank you very much.
I think the only thing that I would put to you is, you know, moving forward and making a difference. And your description of yourself echoes how I got into journalism 40 years ago. I didn't get into this to become, you know, a brand name or, you know, someone like Jake Tapper, who I know Jake, and I'm not slamming him, but that's not me. I do it because I like the art of telling stories and making a difference. So I kind of parallel you in a different way. What is the number one thing that you look for, either as an actor or a producer, in terms of that story that you want to tell? What's the critical element to you that makes you grab the script and go, this is it, or grab the article and go, this is it, or just remember the story?
Right. I think first and foremost, authenticity and heart. If I am personally moved, whether it's moved to tears or laugh hysterically or so forth, I mean, that is the one thing, like, where I feel personally moved, personally affected. And that's probably the one thing that I would say. In a close second, would be being told in an authentic voice. You know, sort of like, wow, I haven't thought about that from that perspective before. I haven't seen it from that angle before, and so forth. So an authentic, unique voice would be a close second.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I think that looking at, you know, a greater body of work and the work going forward, you know, I wish you well in that endeavor, and I do look forward to seeing more from you, Rob.
Thank you very much.
I can't wait to see everything on the checklist. It's like on the your production side, it's like they're all super exciting. Alex, we're almost out of time. One thing I'd like to ask our guests, you know, because we've talked about a lot of things, what haven't we asked you about that we should have?
Sure. I just like to make a plug for Clemency, and I want to let you know where people can see it.
Absolutely. Please do.
Well, Clemency is now New York and Los Angeles. It's expanding this weekend in San Francisco and Washington, D.C., and going much wider on the 17th and then nationwide on the 24th of January. So you can look for the film information and where to see it at clemencythefilm.com.
There you go. Well, we wish you best of luck around that film. I think it's only the beginning for you. I think it's going to launch a lot of really fantastic, wonderful things for you. And the work that you have coming out and that you've produced is very exciting, and people need to check it out. Can you give some information on how they find out more about the Castle 2000 films and where to find those?
Sure. You can go to castle2000.com. You can also go to Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Castle2000.
Excellent. Thank you, Alex, so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it and appreciate your work. Very exciting. You're going to have an impact. You're having an impact, and that alone is super exciting. Brody, I want to thank you, as always, for everything you do and putting together the show here and co-hosting. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in every week and having put us on the podcast map in terms of popularity. We really appreciate you. I want to thank our brand new sponsor, the Los Angeles Blade. Make sure you check them out on losangelesblade.com. And also, don't forget, Out in Santa Cruz, that's my other radio show that takes place Saturday night. 7 p.m. Pacific time, 10 p.m. Eastern time, and you can hear that on www.ksco.com that Saturday night. For Brody and myself and Rated LGBT Radio, we will be back again next week with another podcast for you. Tell your friends. They can find us on virtually any podcast app. Just do a search on Rated LGBT Radio, and please do hit subscribe. We will be back again next week, and for that, we say adieu.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.